Brasil, members of the media, thank you very much for your attendance. We will request that the presentation take us until 10 o'clock. We are aware that the bounty presentation, so if you do injustice to it because of time constraints, we will blame ourselves and not you. And then we will break for tea at the quarter past 11. When we come back, we will move on to another business and then we will release. Is that enough? Honorable Honor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on another matter, yesterday's session on the transformation of the state law advisors was cancelled. Can you give an indication as to when that session will take place? Because it is obviously something I think we as the committee need to address urgently.
It will take place on the ADs, but I must say that we take responsibility because if we cancel, there have to be reasons, and the reasons must be communicated to members of parliament and the officials which are supposed to appear here. Because we don't want officials to incur expenses coming to meetings which are not going to take place. So we want to apologize for that. We will ensure that in future that is possible. I'm not sure if HON is an abbreviation or honor. I'm calling both HON and HON. Is that right? Okay. Can I hand over to the National Commission?
Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity and good morning. We have a team that is going to see us through the presentation, and as Chairperson has indicated, my name is Garavea Modise, the Acting National Commissioner of the Department of Correctional Services. Next to me is CDC Jito, Ms. Ntabise Musupie, whose main task is to ensure that we have infrastructure and policy with regard to IT. Next to her is Ms. Nomsila Jolingana, the COO, who will take us through the presentation. At the back, behind me, Mr. James Smoldega, who is responsible for incarceration and corrections. We also have Ms. Nandima Reka, the acting CFO. We also have Mr. Mdela, who is the chief director responsible for facilities. And at the back there, behind Mr. Smallberga is Ms. Rosa Rothman, who is the CDC responsible for remand. Mr. Jacob Tibuho, who is responsible for mess in the department, and Mr. Hendrik Spain, who is a director in security. Chairperson, the presentation as prepared by the team has been provided to the Secretariat, and it will largely focus on the areas that the committee has requested us to come and give inputs. But at the end, we also have a presentation that talks to how the integration will seem to be taking place. Without any waste of time, Chairperson, I'll put to this committee, Mr. Lingana, to take us through the presentation as requested by the portfolio committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Acting National Commissioner. Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members of the committee. The presentation will firstly deal with some of the areas that we have to cover, the issue of overcrowding and its impact on security. And also, will give us a correlation between inmate population and negative security-related matters. Overcrowding is a global phenomenon that undermines the efforts of correctional services to rehabilitate offenders. And we know that in this country, overcrowding has been identified as a key challenge which negatively affect the ability of South African correctional system to deliver effective rehabilitation programs for offenders. Section 35(2)(e) of the Bill of Rights and articulated in the Constitution of the Republic states that offenders have the right to conditions of detention that are consistent with human dignity, including at least exercise and the provision at state expense of adequate accommodation, nutrition, reading material, and medical treatment. Overcrowding within our facilities means that there is a challenge for South Africa to guarantee all these rights to inmates. It is actually recognized that the solution to overcrowding does not reside solely on the Department of Correctional Services. There's an intervention just on the government committee and its structures, for example, the case management and intersectoral committee on child justice, which are also responsible to address, to identify and address problems that result in overcrowding. The role players in those structures include correctional services, social security, Department of Justice, MPA, and Department of Social Development. Correctional services in collaboration with other JCPS local departments follow a multi-pronged strategy, which consists of the following: managing levels of demand and needs through IGS case management system and intersectoral committee on child justice. Managing levels of sentence offenders through improving effective and appropriate use of conditional of sentence for community correctional supervision, release of parole and transfer between correctional centers in an attempt to establish some degree of evenness of overcrowding. Ensuring progress within our government's program for upgrade facilities and to build new facilities that are both consecutive and rehabilitation oriented. Also encouraging the debate in the country about reasons for incarceration and sentence, and encouraging an approach to appropriate sentencing that is focused on facilitating rehabilitation. Enhancing community correctional supervision so that it can be better utilized and an appropriate sentence for less serious crimes. Improving correlation development programs within GPS to ensure the enhanced facilitation of rehabilitation that targets offending behavior. Also encouraging improvement of first and second level of correction in the family and social institutions, social and economic sector, government departments, respectively, to decrease the rate of entry into the criminal justice system, and encouraging community involvement in social reintegration of offenders back into the community so that we can reduce the levels of repeat offending. This chapter is an indication of our overcrowding levels, with figures ranging from 2002 up to 2014. And as we can see that in 2013-14, we're sitting at 150%. The implementation of the multi-pronged strategy by the department in collaboration with its partners culminated in a significant 34% reduction in the average population level in correctional facilities from 2002-03 to 2013-14. GCS is committed to continue with the implementation of the intersectoral multi-pronged strategy in down managing the inmate population. The impact of overcrowding on security. We know that the lack of space is only one of the numerous problems that are experienced as a consequence of overcrowding. Overcrowding can also impact on a number of issues, including the quality of nutrition, the sanitation, related activities, health services, care of vulnerable groups, and also the ability of the case management committees to process mandatory as well as intervention recession for consideration of release date or application for transfer and so on. Overcrowding can also affect the physical and mental well-being of inmates. It can generate inmate tension and violence, exacerbate existing mental and physical health problems, also increase the risk of transmission of communicable diseases, it also poses immense management challenges in terms of classification and preparation of different categories. It affects direct supervision by staff, dealing with unmet complaints, idleness, and delivery of services. It can also create an environment where gangs use the dissatisfaction of inmates with the above conditions to further their own cause or violent actions. The following relates to the impact of overcrowding on staffing. Staff resources do not usually keep pace with inmate numbers. As a result, the staff inmate staff ratio decline. Challenges presented by overcrowding can have a profound impact on staff performance and attitude, with a negative impact on their ability to fulfill their duties for profession. In such circumstances, staff will often take more than more for the career and less for the people. The combination of overcrowding and inadequate staff numbers are lethal in relation to the delivery of cost security functions, such as supervision, movement control, and handling of emergencies. Classifying and separating offenders according to their age, gender, and the risk imposed to others becomes difficult because of issues of faith. It may also lead to the further criminalization of offenders and for minor offenses as a result of being accommodated for extended periods with moderate and violent offenders. In terms of safety and security, overcrowding has a major impact on the safety and security of inmates and staff, where inmate to staff ratios increase. And in such instances, tensions can be high and inmates become angry and frustrated about the conditions under which they are held. Experiences in other countries have shown that the risk of violence, inmate protests, and other disturbances in overcrowded correctional centers are acute. In many systems, the lack of staff to supervise the growing number of inmates has led to selected inmates informally being given supervisory or end disciplinary roles to keep order and maintain security in correctional centers. This violates, for example, a basic principle that is contained in the United Nations Standard Minimum Rule and increases the risk of abuse of vulnerable inmates by those who are stronger as well as corrupt practices. In our context, this situation can also be worsened by the current system which we have, which negatively impacts on inmate staff ratio, that often leads correctional centers with only 50% staff complement on duty. And this matter is currently being attended to by the department in making sure that we have shifts within that will address some of the challenges we are experiencing. Overcrowding, including understaffing, seriously impacts on the ability to operational centers to deliver effective services. I think, Chairperson, this is the repetition of the information on nutrition and sanitation and other challenges that are experienced because of overcrowding. There's an analysis that is based on information for financial years during which special admission of centers was granted by the President. However, the following aspects affected the analysis. There were mass escapes which make it difficult to determine correlation. Assaults were severely underreported in ADIS which nullify any attempt to draw correlation. And also the challenge of unnatural deaths led to blatant different interpretation in ADIS or was regarded as unnatural deaths compared to the current situation. Observations in terms of the population between 2005, 2006, and 2007, we saw a decrease on inmate population by -2.27%. We saw a decrease in escapes, -15.9%. Also a decrease in assaults, -8.9%. Also, we saw an unfortunate decrease in unnatural deaths, 1.7%. There is no doubt, Chairperson and Honourable Members, that overcrowding affects security in correctional facilities. Although there is no valid statistical indication that the size of the image position remains directly and consistent with the negative security related incidents in South Africa. Turning to the issue of the security infrastructure, we were requested to brief the community on access control, on the monitoring and control of the activities inside the facilities, gang management strategies, and the team of officials and the overcrowding which we just covered. The security system of the department is guided by the minimum security standards for correctional centers, which provide for a holistic, coordinated, and synchronized approach to security based on security challenges that are facing correctional centers. The minimum security standard is based on six key pillars of security, complementing each other and when operating together, they constitute the security system of DCS. Pillar 1 talks to personnel security measures. It is vital that the role of personnel in effective security must be clearly defined. The second pillar talks to the physical security measures, such as wall fences, access and control points from the very first line of our defense against the threat of escape. The third pillar talks to technological security measures, such as closed circuit televisions, which are important and useful in any security system to assist security personnel and managers in the effective performance of their duties. It is important, therefore, that this must be utilized as part of the security measures, not as standard measures. The fourth pillar talks to the information security management, which allows for the cost-effective deployment of all security measures. Accurate information about the threat is key to informed decisions and the extent of utilization of resources for security. The fifth pillar talks to operational security measures. It is important for any security system to be backed up by a set of clear and conducive security procedures to guide staff in the day-to-day execution of their duties. The sixth pillar talks to the issue of management supervision. Managers and supervisors must have an in-depth understanding and knowledge of their duties, which they are expected to perform. It is imperative that each manager and supervisor be active and visibly involved in the management supervision, inspection, training and control of their units, operational guidance and support to their staff members. Chairperson, on the matter of success control, I will cover the first part and the CDC people will then cover the last part of success control. Access control is conducted at four distinct levels. There's manual access control measures, there's electronic access control, there's security fences, electronic access control as part of a fully integrated system. The manual access control measure is applicable to all operational centers. Access control officials are deployed at access control points. They identify and manually search persons moving in and out of operational centers. Officials assisted by the use of handheld metal detectors and X-ray scanners for searching of parcels in applicable. And there is also manual reporting of persons moving in and out of centers. The electronic one consists of 10 file gates, biometric fingerprints, CCTV cameras, only at access control points, bypass gates, walk-through metal detectors, and control software, which was installed at 65 correctional centers as part of contract HK2 of 2005. The purpose of this system is to assist access control staff in the performing of their access control functions and to provide management with an electronic monitoring capacity. This system was not part of a fully integrated system and the maintenance contract thereof expired. The IDT, Independent Development Trust, is currently in the planning phase for the procurement of access and maintenance of the access system. The procurement will include the upgrading and maintenance of security fences and access control systems as well despite the correctional center previously installed under contract HK24 of 2005. A total of 106 sites, for upgrading and maintenance of access control and fences considered for inclusion. I would like for inclusion in this project. In terms of security fences, Chairperson and Honorable Members, in addition to the 47 sites of security fences mentioned above, the department also engaged in a further rollout of security fences at 27 national centers, and this project is also managed by the IHT. Security fence, the inner and the outer fence with security, lightning, CCTV cameras, and alarm detection. The project includes the installation of security fences as well as access control systems, which will include access control, building CCTV cameras, biometric fingerprint glass, electronic locks, X-ray machines and walk-through metal detector. There's work on 15 correctional centers, which is at completion stage where after the handover process will commence. Chairperson, the work on the remaining sites, which commenced in late 2014, is planned for completion in September 2015. Electronic access control is part of a fully integrated security system, which will be elaborated on later. Currently, we have 14 centers with fully integrated security system, which has been installed under the management of the Department of Public Health, and the centers are mentioned in the presentation. The system includes all equipment for access control, as they were described in the previous slide. In addition, that system includes CCTV cameras in cottages and courtyards. It also has a cell phone detection capacity, video recording, intercoms, public address system, pneumatic control board, electronic locks, panic buttons, fire detection and suppression, access control visitation management system, guard toll system, intelligence gathering, metal detectors and X-ray machines. Chairperson, when it comes to the issue of monitoring and controlling of activities in correctional centers, this is done at GM's level. Level 1 entails supervision, monitoring and control by staff, where officials, which includes security officials and state officials that work in the unit, are specifically deployed to deliver direct supervision, monitoring, and control services over inmates and their activities. This service includes security services, which include movement control, searching, and so on. Level 2 talks to supervision, monitoring, and control by direct line managers. The distress management system provides for full line function managers to perform direct supervisory, monitoring, and control functions over staff performing duties in correctional centers. These would include security managers, operational managers, unit managers, and it is their direct responsibility to ensure that officials deliver as required and to monitor, control, and report on exceptionality or operational breaches, which include corrupt activities and improper relationships between officials and inmates. The third level talks to supervision, monitoring, and control by indirect line managers, and this would be your managers at area level, regional, and national level. Those are the people who have the responsibility to oversee and monitor the delivery of services at center level through reports, visits, and of service delivery, and also interaction with staff and inmates. These are also delegated authorities for taking action when incidents or breaches of policies occur. Level 4 talks to supervision, monitoring, and control by oversight bodies. Here we are referring to the work of the inspectorate, internal auditors who visit centers and report on levels of service delivery, compliance, and areas of concern. We also have the departmental investigation unit, which investigates sensitive cases reported and also cases that are reported through the whistleblowing system. We have a GCS anti-corruption unit, And we also have an anti-corruption strategy, which outlines also the whistleblowing policy and process. The Judicial Inspectorate monitors services and then delivery of services. They also receive complaints and so on using independent visitors to national centers. The fifth level talks to the electronic monitoring via CCTV cameras. Honourable Chair, this is an area where the department can still improve on. CCTV cameras with the reporting capacity can assist officials and managers to monitor activities in correctional centers. And currently, we only have cameras installed at some parameter centers, access control points and passages, courtyards, exercise yards, hospital, station, kitchens, and so on. The second part of the presentation, Chairperson, will be taken by Jito. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good morning, members and colleagues. I'm just going to take you through the details of the access control in terms of what we, the findings that we have done, as well as the progress that we have done in terms of the access control. In our first slide, the access control system is basically what we have given to IDT. IDT was appointed to do the access control and associated security systems in various correctional centers, and those facilities is in pressure by making sure that we enhance on the existing access control that was done by Sondolo, as well as the security control that was done by Pearson in terms of the contract that we have about. IDT appointed SEPA consultancy. We through an open tender process in November 2012 as electronic security consulting engineers. And SEPA did a finding and assessment of all our facilities that were contracted because the two contractors mentioned in the first page. So what they have found out was non-compliance with minimum DCS standards, statutory requirements and national standards. The existing infrastructure largely was obsolete. There was a gap between the existing system and the latest technology. Obviously, as technology evolves, there will be changes within the technology. The gaps were also identified by the end user touch requirements and existing security. The past systems were not fully integrated. There were several single points of failure identified. There were no structured maintenance in place in terms of what has been implemented. There are manual and cumbersome call logging procedures. The disaster recovery center was non-functional, and the proprietary solution that was implemented required. Furthermore, in terms of the findings, the recorded video footage were not practically usable. System availability and reliability were very low. Various subsystems not operational, e.g. access control, intrusion detection, and all those things, obviously based on the technology that is obsolete. Existing perimeter lighting is generally inadequate. No wire detection and automatic operation equipment installed in control rooms and equipment rooms. The single room was used as both a control room where the officials were sitting, as well as an equipment office as well. Poor economics, it is small control rooms and air conditioning and furniture. Client exposure to security risks were very high. The objective of the program in terms of the access control was to make sure that we enhance the security and compliance with DCF minimum security requirements, to define the boundaries of security and other areas, enhance verification evidence and availability in terms of the video footage, improve flow control of inmates, visitors and members, ensure the training to maintenance of personnel and operations so that the department can continuously maintain the system on their own outside the service provider. Ensure provision of secondary options for control room operations should the facility not comply with its obligation to provide operations. How to achieve the objective? We need to make sure that we repair the access control and its associated subsystems and into an acceptable functional maintainable status.
upgrade all the obsolete and undercapacitated or proprietary software that exists within the department, enhance the early warning systems, improve or introduce system scalability, redundancy, availability, reliability, maintainability, integration and manageability. Integration of all our systems at the central, regional and national level, because we have been working in isolation from the fences and the access control. Implementation of the National Disaster Recovery Center, implementation of structured maintenance program, compliance with all relevant security system and operational requirements. In terms of the bigger scope, as the access control itself, including testers, gates and doors, CCTV surveillance, mainly in the courtyard, the hospital, the passages, but not included in the cells themselves, which will be our second phase of implementation. Fire detection and suppression within the control room, power backup system, UPS and generators, air conditioning within the control room building fixtures and fittings, access point intercom systems, security lighting, security fence and components, IP network architecture, IPTV system infrastructure, which is the TVs that we have in our center. We need to put a system there, decommissioning and disposing of old assets. The project scope does not include the following things that are mentioned, but those things will be integrated into the full electronic security system. Public address system, cell phone detection system, cell intercom system, prison or image management system, as well as the voice scanners. The program will cover the sites that I mentioned there. We'll have a national control room that will have the disaster recovery at an external or a place outside the national control room. We'll have systems that will be implemented in the regional centers, in the regional offices, which are six. We have 99 correctional centers that will be covered, and one disaster recovery area that will be covered as well. I think in terms of the compliance, we have said what the objective of the system should be in terms of that. And we'll just move on to the program data, what we have done so far. We have completed the preliminary stage where we did a requirements gathering, search investigation, concept design and approval. That has been already completed. We have designed the system, how we want the system to look like in detail, and we almost ready with the tender documents as well as the estimation of the cost. And the next phase would be obviously to have a procurement process where we'll do a pre-qualification on an open tender before we provide the full scope of work to whoever the bidder or the winner of the pre-qualification would be. Because this is security matters. We can't have our documentation out in public in terms of where we want certain things to be refining, hence we have a pre-qualification process. Then we'll start with the program where we'll do repair and upgrade and the project implementation, which will take plus minus 12 months in terms of implementation. Then we'll have a 3-year maintenance contract of routine preventative and corrective maintenance. Then the project will close out. In that case, we also want to make sure that whatever that we do in maintenance and support will have internal resources to continue with the maintenance and support of the system after that. So procurement stage, one pre-qualification open tender with ready to be processed, and then the two closed tender to proceed after conclusion of stage one, then we'll appoint a contractor, and the participants in that will be national department as well as both IDT and Clever Consulting will be assisting us with the implementation of the project. What we have covered as well in terms of the fencing is we'll make sure that whatever contract is happening within the fences and the access control, we have integrated solution for both systems, then we're able to manage it as a national department for our security access control. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. The other area that we were requested to cover relates to the issue of gang management. We developed a gang management strategy in April 2010, and all regions, management areas and centers were to develop own action plans based on the national strategy as a guideline. And in 2012, we appointed a gang management task team, and the task team identified what we call hotspots, areas that require attention by the government. We have a gang management checklist, and heads of centers and area commissioners report progress to regional commissioners on the implementation of that tool as of July 2015, with a specific focus on hotspot areas. Such reports are tabled in regional gang management task team meeting for elevation to the national gang management task team. We had a gang reference group appointed in July 2013, and we serve as a source of knowledge, coming up with manuals, determining training, and so on. The number of gangs was also elevated to the National Joint Operations and Intelligence Structures, not joint, to formulate a more dynamic and integrated approach which does not only focus on challenges of operational services. The National Intelligence Coordinating Committee led an intergovernmental gang management task team, and we are also represented in that. They did fact-finding visits, focusing on Portsmouth and St. Albans, and further visits are planned to other regions where there are hotspot centers that have been identified. There has been awareness training for heads of centers on gangs, and the implementation of the gang management strategy is currently in progress and will be rolled out to all other levels of staff. We are currently, as a department, negotiating with the CSIR for signing off an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, to assist with research on various topics, of which gang services is also included. In terms of areas of high gang density, we've identified Portsmouth and Bulut in the Western Cape, Port Elizabeth and East London in the Eastern Cape, Durban, Pietermaritzburg and Mbangi in KwaZulu-Natal, Greater Johannesburg and Sami in Gauteng, Barachin, Glengop and Potchefstroom, LMN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga Northwest, Bloemfontein, Kimberley and Groenbend in the Free State and Northern Cape. The objectives of the gang management strategy are to maintain a secure and safe environment that is conducive to the rehabilitation of inmates and the attendance of remand detainees in court processes. To encourage a management approach to reduce or eliminate impact of security threats, to enable intersectoral cooperation, for example, between government and civil society organizations, to address the potential negative effects of incarceration, and to build, develop and build knowledge on gangs in order to develop effective responses so that we can improve our strategies. Chairperson, the following are then the objectives, strategy and activities in relation to gang management. First, in terms of maintaining a secure and safe environment that is conducive to the rehabilitation, the strategy is to create and maintain a secure environment through dynamic and proactive risk management. This would include profiling of gangsters, photos taken of all the tattoos on the offender's body so that we can understand the meaning of each and every tattoo. All gangsters are profiled, and the ratio between gangsters and the total population is monitored. In terms of responding promptly and effectively to comprehensive incidents and threats to the safety and the needs of inmates and staff, immediate action when it comes to issue of victimization and assault. Immediate action is taken to assist the victim. There's an internal investigation that is launched immediately, and where there are cases of sexual. sexual assault and acts of violence. These are reported to the South African Police Service immediately for their investigation. Victims and perpetrators of sexual assault and acts of violence are separated immediately. In terms of management approach to prevent and reduce the impact of disruptive groups on the management of correctional centers, interventions would include working with offenders that, offenders that divulge security information leading to positive results are rewarded in line with special admission policy. Conduct details of the persons, institutions that display the notice board so that offenders should know what process to follow and how to report. You can either go to the head of center or the area commissioner or call an anti-corruption hotline. But also the whistleblowing policy is implemented and marketed on notice boards in centers on what people should do when they want to blow a whistle and raise awareness. Disciplinary actions are taken against gang members and staff for involvement in any gang activities where we are aware. Direct supervision is also applied over the movement of gang members and when they attend programs. Prominent leaders are separated from other offenders once they've been identified. Unannounced searching is conducted on prominent gang leaders, gangsters and their cells, and special groups like older offenders, young teen and vulnerable offenders are separated from gang members. In terms of management involvement, we've got debriefing of staff and offenders after every violent security incident. Complaints and requests are handled in terms of Section 21 of Act 111 of 1998, and feedback is given within 7 days. The basic physical needs of offenders are also addressed in line with Correctional Services Order B, Sub Order 3, Chapter 2. Management must create a risk-free environment. All life must be in working conditions, broken windows must be fixed, and items that can be used for suicide and other violent incidents are removed from all criminal cells and single cells. In terms of training, all security officials are trained on control and restraint techniques, staff are trained and or oriented on the gang information manual, and training for managers on gang management is also ongoing. Investigators, case presenters, and presiding officials are also trained to handle disciplinary cases against gang members. Officials that are knowledgeable on gang strategy on gangs are strategically placed so that they can assist other officials. And all officials are sensitized on the whistleblowing and handling of whistleblowers. When it comes to the implementation of the intelligence and information management system, security threats or risks are immediately reported to the head of center for intervention, and all threats are regarded as serious. Senior investigators are appointed to investigate gang-related incidents, and these investigations receive top priority. Monthly reports are submitted to the regional offices, to security and corrections, and lessons learned and are shared, especially areas where there are best practices that are implemented. All visitors that are known gangsters are recorded. All telephone calls made and received by known gangsters are also recorded. And center and management task teams need management to review their plans. In terms of intersectoral cooperation with the government and civil society, regular meetings are taking place between heads of federal security agencies and the police, and a database on conduct details are available. DCS management is also involved in structures such as cross joints, night joints, NICOG, task team, and so on, so that we know also the gangsters that are not necessarily within correctional services but are up and coming in the communities and what their impact may be on our lake. In terms of addressing potential negative effects of incarceration, the orientation information manual is available to all offenders upon admission at HCMC. All offenders are informed of the unit rules upon admission. Chairperson, I think that would have been the last one on the issue of gangs, because it just outlines how we work with the different structures. The last part I think we were supposed to cover is the issue of vetting of officials. The vetting unit of the department has...
I'll give you 10 minutes to
proceed. Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. We established a field work unit of DCS in 2008 in terms of the National Vetting Strategy of 2006. And this unit has got 11 officials in it, and the department has approximately 42,000 officials, 41,825 field posts on its establishment. A total of 1,519 officials have been vetted, and the breakdown is as follows: 1,199 on confidential, 199 on top secret, and secret 129. 5 in progress at State Security Agency, we have 3,071. In the same breath, the department recruits and absorbs into its system an average of 1,200 learner graduates per year, and also require security screening and vetting prior to their permanent employment. We also recruit about 1,000 interns per annum who are also security screened before they get absorbed to their department. The amount of work that must be conducted by the vetting team to ensure that the department hires suitable and security competent personnel outweighs the capacity that we have in terms of the team. The vetting unit has prioritized the vetting of supply chain management as a result of the presidential instruction, of which the data is as follows. Out of 810 applicants that were processed for vetting, a total of 810 were processed for vetting out of 1,200 supply chain management officials guideline. And the breakdown is explained below. 810 out of 1.2 supply chain, number of applicants submitted to SSA 671, and then a total number of certificates that were received back is 139. A total number of supply chain officials still to submit application forms is 390. At SMS level, the department has 220 funded posts, and 174 of those are filled, and out of those, 127 members are on salary, which are on salary level 13, with 47 that have been, no, social business. Of the 174, 127 members are on salary level 13, and 47 of those are salary level 14 to 16. The number that is effect out of those is 8% 14. The feasibility of reaching the target is affected by the capacity challenges and the fact that when was the instruction to vet supply chain, then the direction changed to facilitate the vetting of supply chain officials. In terms of challenges, we have challenges, as we explained, in screening candidates for new posts, challenges in vetting of SMS members, also re-vetting those with expired clearances, and again, this is alluded to the issue of challenges in vetting administration component. All vetting officials conduct the pre-employment screening functions, which entails checking of criminal records, credit record check, qualification verification, and citizenship check. And this leads to some of the indicators such as re-vetting and vetting of existing and that creates a backlog. We have requested SSA to vet all SMS members level 14 to 15, and we are also in the process of conducting a feasibility study to roll out vetting units for regions. Vetting of existing members not vetted and those with vetting clearances have expired is prioritized for, I think it should be 2014 to 2020. Particular vetting of new employees during recruitment and also vetting of leadership candidates is conducted to assure that we are suitable for international leadership. So that was the last slide to the strategy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, and thank you for the department for this information. May I go back to access control? And I'm really referring to the previous two contracts, and the statement is made that the maintenance contract systems are now those systems are less than 10 years old from the time that they were first installed. And then a little bit later, when one's talking about the IDT program for access control, one says that the new program was to follow on from the contracts, the Sondola contract and the Pezula contract. I think it would be very important, just as an exercise in learning from the past, to know in what respect the previous contracts were unsatisfactory or outdated, but more particularly how much money was spent on those two contracts over time so as to determine whether the state got value for money. Secondly, I would be very interested to know the directors and shareholdings of CEPA Consulting, which is the IDT appointed company that is providing access control. And finally, Chair, I find it disappointing that we made so little progress in the whole area of vetting of officials, because if anything, I think we've probably gone a little bit backwards from where we were. Specifically, the senior management level officials who are only sitting on 14 out of 174. And the dilemma that I think we're going to face, unless we deal with this more holistically, is that as we seek to security clear more people, so more people's security clearance will expire. And we'll be on a spinning wheel that will never ever get anywhere. So I'm not sure whether the number of officials that have been appointed to do this process internally is sufficient. I mean, there are only 11 of them, and I'd like to know what if they're talking about extending this down to regional level, it's obviously going to involve a lot more officials, and what steps are going to be taken in cooperation with the South African Secret Service to ensure that we get ahead of the curve so that we're not constantly playing catch-up on this map, because as we all know, if you want to get to the bottom of the game management strategy, we have to make sure that the people that we appoint and the people that are at the coalface are actually honest people that are not corrupt and not on the take. Thank you, John.
I think the questions are involved. I want to admit that they're important before taking over.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me start with the question on the vetting unit and the G2 and the assist on the other questions. Yes, Honourable Member, the number of 11 is really limited capacity, as we indicated in the presentation. When we talk about rollout to the regions, we are looking at building more capacity, because the 11 people are currently not coping. But we are also in discussions with SSA to assist us in fast tracking, particularly the senior management, because it is true that as we vet new people, others since they are expiring, we need to revet them again. So we have that that center that we can break, and so that if we have this regional capacity, so that those people can focus on the supply chain people, the security people, and others, and then we get LSA to assisting us with the more senior positions, maybe we can be able to push it. But it is a challenge that we are putting on the table to say, indeed, we do have a serious challenge in this area.
Thanks, Chairperson. In terms of the question on how much we spend with regards to the previous 2005 contract on access control, we spent in total about 267 million for the 65 centers that had access control. And if the committee would call, we at that stage we have also control rooms that were managed at and also at the National Control Center, which were outsourced. So that's the amount of money that we spend for access control. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think in terms of the assessment, we have done an assessment for the two contracts. We are able to see where it gets up. What we have highlighted as well is alluded in terms of the summary of the findings to say that we have obviously have outdated technology infrastructure. As we know, the technology changes every 6 months. So if you have a proprietary solution that you have procured, you need to make sure that you pay for the licensing continuously. And then if that proprietary solution, if they don't do their own researches to upgrade the system will remain as it is throughout the year. So within 10 years is a very long time to have one system. So we need to replace the systems, because as your textile technology changes, as your biometric technology changes, you need to upgrade the software that you have within your environment. Hence we did that assessment. We're also coming in terms of who are the shareholders and the owners of the consulting, and our consulting engineers who did the assessment will provide the committee with that information as soon as we receive it.
No, Chair, thank you. And this is my side. Thank you for the presentation. And again, we need to consider the presentation in the light of previous presentations about the budget constraints and the constraints relating to public works and the facilities. That was very helpful, I think. So when we consider overcrowding, we need to consider it against that background. And it is noteworthy that in 2002, was 164% overcrowding, and we're down to 130% now, which is still high, but there is an improvement. But there are a couple of issues that I just wanted to look at, and a lot of what will be helpful is when our budget review recommendation report is published next week, I think, and the department will be looking carefully at that. We've made a number of recommendations in that report, which I don't want to go through all of them now, but one of them, two of them relates to the current shift system, and we'd like to know when that issue is going to be resolved. Is it, we know there was a lot of controversy when it was introduced, but obviously it has resulted, and our concern not only for the inmates but also for the officials. We need to make that very clear. So we have overcrowded, it is a danger to both inmates and officials. So we would just like to know the current shift system. And then I know Mr. Smith spoke at length about the issue of technology, usage of technology. I would like, and we do say in our report, the possibility of TV cameras, and we have noted that there are, but what is the, we need to look at the issue of usage of those in cells. And we've got a very useful gift from our researchers, and I think that is something to consider, particularly when you consider the impact of gangsters and what is going on at night when there is lockup. What is going on there? And that is something I would like the department to consider. And again, we appreciate the financial constraints, but that is something that persists. Now, in the light of that, I'd like to then just ask a few particular questions on the issue of assaults. Again, our report asks and issues a concern that there isn't a specification between common assault and sexual assault. And we need to find a mechanism that we can understand whether it is a common assault, assault GH, which is assault with intent to do serious bodily harm, or a sexual assault. We note that in 2005, there were a similar number of incarcerated prisoners, 162,000 odd, and there were 2,001 reports of assault. This year, 7,370. Which obviously indicates there was huge underreporting previously. Underreporting, I would say. But is there still underreporting? And we commend the department on the steps that have been taken with whistleblowing, with incentives to people to come forward. But obviously we share concern about prisoners being locked up at night and what goes on in those cells. To what level is there still intimidation where people are sexually assaulted at night by gangsters? Chair, those are just a few comments from my side. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Sir. I also raising the question of security of the official. Because sometimes, you know, like when we deal with the police, you deal with the security of other people and not the police. I think we live better than France. So whatever we will do, to involve that the officials also have to be protected. Honorable Nguyen.
Yes, I think most what I was going to say, particularly with the CCTV cameras, has been covered by Honorable Flood. I just want to stress this. I think it will be, I don't know how much expensive, I think it's a priority. I think it will also save, you are able to know even the members who are working together with the prisoners. If you have those cameras, I think it can reduce your work dramatically. Secondly, I wanted to find out the question of tagging. I don't know now that we are, this department is also the same as the Department of Health, whether if the magistrate can order that if you have to send somebody to prison, that the person can be tagged, you know, and be out of, to reduce their overcrowding. And whether you can initiate that, or we want us to do so on your behalf, together with the justice, with the magistrates, to find out if this is possible. And how expensive it is. I understand that you probably have service provider who does that for you, if I'm not mistaken. Is it possible that this can be done by the department? What are the risks involved in having somebody else monitoring, or at least in having that device? It's not better that you people do it yourself. What are the problems for me? And that's all.
I think we're moving in the right direction, trying to help construct. Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, maybe we should start by, whilst appreciating what is here, make a proposal, because what you're saying is that how is it to assist? Now, for us to assist, I would make a suggestion that the proposals, for instance, if you take the scope, you know, if we had a Gantt chart that said this is the scope, this is the time by when it's going to be completed, and this is the cost. I'm saying that, Chairperson, because in the past 2 years we spent 11 billion rand. The past 2 financial years, 11 billion rand on security. I'm not sure that we can turn around now and say, what did that 11 billion rand buy us? Because we never had this kind of a Gantt chart. So in terms of the scope, if we had a Gantt chart that says we can put CCTV cameras, it will be done by the end of November so that we can monitor and assist the department. So that's the general proposal. But go onto the actual proposals, Chair, and we've raised them, and maybe the department must come back to us and indicate. What was the motivation of going to IDT? And IDT, Chair, then goes to them. So we have two middlemen that must do an assessment for the department. The department understands that it needs to do gang whatever, or even security. But what does it do? It goes to IDT. IDT goes to CEPO just to give us a report back. So I'm wondering what is the value add of those two, Chair. And is it not better that we reclaim our responsibility as DCS, as DCS, and do those things? So that's just the first question, over and above what anybody else raised. I've never understood why we're taking these things through, especially in the security environment, why we outsource our security responsibility. So that's the first one. Just the rationale between us and IET and second one. The second one, Chair, if you go to the scope, and I'm happy that the scope covers everything, my only concern is when we look at the project scope, we say we're going to do all these things and we will integrate others. My proposal would be, Chair, that things like cell phone detection systems and body scanners can't be afterthought. You can't do all these things and then, because those are the biggest problems that we have. The use of cell phones, you know, and we know it's happening all over the country. So it shouldn't be an airbag. It should be as important as CCTV cameras. So that's the proposal that I'm making, that they must go back and change their budget scope. That's the proposal that I'm making. Certainly in body scanners, because we know that people are smuggling things in. It's not a new phenomenon. We know the cell phones are being used, and these systems are available. So I'm just asking that we reprioritize, or at least include them in the initial one. The third one then, Chair, is I would suggest that the department, I don't know, because they say somewhere in their slide that the IDT project is, it's got 27 or 15, and there's others that will be done, which is fine. I don't have a problem with this. But I do think we must marry that, Chair, to what the COO said later on about the challenges and the high density areas of gangsters. In other words, if those 27 or those 15 others that are spoken about by Gito exclude the high density gangster areas, then we're not serious about UV. Because I would assume that the areas that we must prioritize are the ones that we've identified as problem areas. And I would then ask the question, if those others that we are talking about don't include Paul Small, don't include Jova, don't include those others, why should we spend another 5 million rand and not look at those at a high density? My suggestion would be, let's take the hotspots, deal with them, and then deal with the others. So those are the three proposals here that firmly I want to put on the table in terms of reviewing what they've presented to us.
I think Honorable Scudio are raising a very interesting question, because if you look at the Justice Department, they also give work on TRC processes to IDT. Now corrections give work to IDT. Now the question is, what is this special capacity that the IDT are having? And if their task is just to manage, and then they contract someone else, and now both the departments are coming to us. Now when they come to us, they will say the IDT is busy, and then we will expect them to know what the IDT is busy with and is doing. But the IDT will not know because Chepo is busy, is doing something. At the end, means at the end of the term of our office, we are not able to hold the departments accountable because everything has been, sourced out. So this is not the challenge which actually relates to this department. I think we have to look broadly also in other departments. What are these relationships that you get a middleman, the middleman gets another middleman? At the end, who are you holding accountable? And then the other thing you made mention of, so fair about the timelines. You see, if we are told this will be done by this time, by this time, then when we invite the department to come to us, we know what we expect. If things are just open, it makes life very difficult. And I hope that contracting IDG and other agencies will not actually be any kind of passing the buck. When I contract you so that the thing is no longer in my hands, the person I contract passes on so that it's no longer in the hand, so at the end in 5 years we'll still be waiting for results and they will never come. So it's a broader question. It's not only about this department, but it's a broader question that government as a whole has to. Over to
you, Honorable Chairperson and members, thank you very much for the opportunity. I think what we will do, Chair, is to provide a comprehensive response to the question of IDT and CEPAM and why IDT, providing reasons to the committee so that we deal with this matter conclusively. Because as an agent that is performing the same task as the Department of Public Works, we were made aware that for us to get better and faster turnaround in the completion of projects, then we should then look at that as part of our enterprise project management. So I will ensure that we provide a comprehensive response to that question that indicates why IGT and what role that TEPA play. Chairperson, maybe to start with the issues that were raised of a shift pattern. The committee is aware that during the term of former Minister Sibusiso Ndebele, we had established a ministerial task team that had to look into particular human resource-related matters. One of that is the shift pattern, and as well as the OSB and the other matters, like, for instance, your center is non-center based. The task team is about to conclude its work, and we are very confident that next week, Monday, when we have the last engagement, that they give us a report on the issues, we shall then be in a position to take a decision on a shift pattern for the department, because the members would remember that it's something that is long overdue. There was actually a court order that should have been done by 31st of August 2008. But because of the instability that has been there, no decision could be taken to finalize the shift pattern, which we agree with the committee that it is one of the costly factors that there is no direct supervision at our institutions, and that leads to contraband and incidents of assaults that are escalating. We want to finalize that by the end of this month, so that come December, we have a new shift pattern in the Department of Correctional Services. CCTV cameras, the department is committed to put up CCTV cameras. So far, we're putting up CCTV cameras at our gates, at our hallways, in our courtyards. We have not gone to the extent of putting cameras in our cells. And that is precisely as a result of the engagement that the department was to have with the Human Rights Council, as well as with the stakeholders that have an interest in that operate in our environment, including the portfolio committee, because we agree and we understand that there are incidents that happen during the night when we are not there inside ourselves. However, we also need to balance and look at what are the rights of other offenders who may not necessarily have taken part in this. But we do not lose sight of the fact that victims have also rights, and the department is moving swiftly to attaining the opinions of those organizations that I have mentioned. I think coming to the point of tagging of remandee chairperson, we do have one remandee that is tagged in the country. It is still a testing phase to see whether, as a country, we can tag our remandees. It would be much cheaper. It can be put on your leg or on your hand. But what we need to make sure is for us to monitor those that are not sentenced would require as well an amendment to the legislation. And once that has been done, I think it would be easy then for us to also utilize electronic monitoring for remandees. But the chairperson would remember that initially that was the idea to send the team to Brazil and New York to look at what can be done with regard to sentence as well as people that have not been sentenced. Why can't we utilize that to bring down the high number of remandees in our facilities? So this has been put on a test now to see as whether in this case will we derive the joy that the project is intended for. Chairperson, I think I've responded to the questions. If colleagues have others that you want to respond on, please do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the issue that was raised by Honorable Smith, the privatization of hotspot areas or high density areas, indeed we agree on that. We have recently awarded a tender for body scanners because we prioritized, we realized that this is a basket of solutions that we need, but there are those that we prioritized, and the body scanners was one of those. So all the areas that were mentioned under the high density areas will receive body scanners. The tender has already been awarded. We signed a contract on the 20th, and we gave the service provider, I think, three months to conclude the installation of body scanning equipment in those high-density area facilities. But yes, Honorable Chair, we agree that maybe with all the other equipment that we are talking about, it would be useful to provide the portfolio committee with exact dates, because there are centers where this cell phone detection has been tested. We tested it in direct female. We are now going to proceed and do in the those centers that have been installed in the Western Cape and make sure that we will provide the committee with that information with clear deadlines to see when will what be done. Thank you, Chair.
We are not saying that government doesn't have the right to use other government agencies or to contract other agencies or private companies to do some work. But I think the idea is that it shouldn't happen in such a way that government loses control and no longer knows what's happening. But your words are reassuring when you say you give us a comprehensive report and that would assist us to move on. Thanks for that response. Honorable, I want to give young people an opportunity. Honorable Middle English, and then Honorable Sir.
Thank you, Sir President.
In
terms of number 30, where it says that there's a recent peak overcrowding and further criminalization. And this is on the overcrowding section. Obviously that is a very big concern, and the observation that has been made recently, not only by the department but also by stakeholders, that there is this link. And my question to the department is, how do they mitigate this, or how do they intend on mitigating this? Because we can't afford a situation where people go into prison and come out more criminal than they were when they went in. But related to this, I think it's evidence to me that the problem is not with correctional services in a situation where they have to manage on their plate, or what is on their plate, without having any real control over what comes onto the plate. And they're making, as I see it, the base of a very difficult situation. And what I'd like to hear from the department, and I would also like to ask the committee to consider, is the engagement with the Department of Justice around ensuring that the prison population is effectively, it's not reduced with us, but that the entrance into the correctional facility is better managed, so that people for minor offences are not simply shoved into prison because there's no alternative. So one thing that the department has with the Justice Department, and also for us as a committee, to have considerable discussion on alternative sentencing and all those
things. Thank you very much indeed, and thanks for the response to my first question. I'd like also if the department could just let us know whether SEPA Consulting does any other work for the Department of Correctional Services, because you will recollect that in the past we had this problem of one single contractor doing multiple projects and then not being able to do justice. But I'd like to address the whole question of CCTV cameras and their effectiveness and indeed the effectiveness of any other technological device that one installs. Because you will recollect that there was an uprising, a riot in Kimberley New Prison a couple of years ago. And the courtyards in that prison have got CCTV cameras. And my recollection was that we were unable to use the footage of those cameras to identify and prosecute the perpetrators of that, or the instigators of that uprising, because the quality of the recording was of a state that we couldn't use it. So what I would like is the assurance that we're going through the whole process of revamping our access control, revamping and integrating our IT systems, that the equipment that we install is of a quality that will be really effective, and that we're not just spending a whole lot of money on getting a system for the sake of having a system, but to actually ensure that the quality is such that we can in fact detect a cell phone if it's being smuggled in, that we can in fact jam telephone calls up. Don't get calls from prisoners at 3 o'clock in the morning. That would be a great relief to me.
Thank you, Judge. Just to thank the department for the presentation and the progress that's actually been made. In terms of security infrastructure, yesterday came with a minimum security standards, which is a good approach. But what would be important in future would be for you to just actually indicate to what extent you're complying with the minimum security standards in terms of the pillars. Indicating percentage, for example, how far you've gone, and justify progress. So we actually really understand in this and that area what actually is an impediment to you being in the position to fully comply. Another thing that I want to know is also the same question that was asked by another person saying it is, whether you do manage, when it comes to overcrowding, you manage to talk to all these other old players, NPA, Civil in South Africa, Social Development, so that, you know, at the end of the day, you manage to come up with a comprehensive solution. Because when NPA is here, some of the reports that we're getting is that overcrowding is because of the politician, the court voice. And then at some stage you hear that it has got to do with legal in South Africa. There's no proper legal representation in court, the case cannot go on. How do you, and then also there's incidences where we hear of child of industry in prisons, social development. Do you manage to come up with a comprehensive strategy that actually manages to help us to deal with areas of this nature? And then the time and again, there's a suggestion of community rehabilitation, which I think you need the strategy on. And you probably need to look at possible amendment of legislation to make it possible, which means that there's got to be concerted efforts of actually making it a process that relates to the original legislative amendment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Tends me to say something for the department. You know, as I said at the beginning, these challenges point to the fact that rehabilitation, integration, these are societal matters. We can change the law, but the law is not going to change society. Now, the question is, what is the role of civic organizations, women and youth organizations, religious organizations? For me, society itself is not coming to the party. I don't know who has the responsibility, whether ourselves or the department, whether what you are calling for, manager, doesn't really need any number where we can say the challenges have been identified. Yeah, and to deal with them, we can't just rely on the department or the official. We need to mobilize the whole society and other sister departments so that we come out
with a situation where everybody knows what their role is, and then we stop there just looking at one direction, and we can always go. I don't know, maybe that's not in the confidence of the department or in our competence, but let's just put our heads together and say, how do we, together with civil society and other departments, begin to work together and address this matter?
Thanks, Chairperson. As I indicated earlier, I'm here with the team. I'll request Mr. Smallega to respond to the overcrowding and fair criminalization, and then request Ms. Greta Hoffman to talk about remand, as well as how do we intend bringing down the numbers. What I can say is we have seen that one of our biggest areas of performance is with regard to contract management, Chairperson. And we therefore are on a mission to strengthen that unit that shall ensure that those that have indicated that they are prepared to provide services to the department and to the state, with the state has full benefit of what is it that has been promised in terms of a service level agreement and a contract. And that's why we will be, as a matter of agency, putting more capacity in our contract management unit to ensure that whoever we contract out, we will then get the benefit of what the department wants. But maybe just to summarize on a few. Second, the approach in government, all departments that work together have been clustered. For instance, those that deal with crime are clustered together, and those that deal with administration are clustered together. In our case, we belong to the Justice, Crime and Prevention Strategy, and we're working there with the social development, we're working there with Department of Justice, the police, the NPA. And one of the areas of integration is with regards to court processes. And how can we speed up court processes, but also to come up with alternative sentencing. Because we are of the opinion that there are those categories of offenders that should not be referred to correctional services to come and do a sentence, but rather be put out to do community service under supervision of the department. And it doesn't have to be talking of short term that are less than 24 months. If it could be the ideal that is cherished by all other JCPS departments, and as a result of our intense interaction, we get an agreement, and the ministers also agree to, it could alleviate quite a lot of our overwhelming challenges that we are encountering on a day-to-day basis. But as I've said, Chairperson, I requested Mr. Smallbank and Ms. Greta Hoffman to respond to questions that members of Parliament have put to us. Thank you.
We are not in Pretoria today. Please answer on this one.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Committee. I wanted to just respond to the issue of the remand detainees. I think we significantly reduced the number of remand detainees. In fact, at the moment we have the lowest year that we've had since 1998 when the system was first implemented, so from when we can properly measure. But we'll see. Obviously, the remand detainees depend on which months you look at, and this December will certainly be a test because that's when our remand detainees tend to go up. But I think the reduction of remand detainees certainly speaks to the better functioning within the cluster. And what the other side of it is, of course, that as our remand detention population drops, for some period of time, our sentence offender population increases. Which is why we tend to look at the description to look at how remand detention fits into the whole of the inmate population. And I think there we're doing very well. Even on the international level, we're below the international average of remand detention versus total inmate population. But we'll continue with the processes that have already been started. One particular forum that we're very much involved in is the one chaired by the Chief Justice National Efficiency Enhancement Committee, which I think pick up on a number of issues within the cluster, which makes it easy for the cluster as a group together with the judiciary to aim at those reductions. But as we go on, obviously we'll develop initiatives depending on what we're looking at. We focused now for quite some time on the top 20, so the ones that have been the longest, and looking at interventions there to see how we can further reduce our length of detention. But certainly one of the other aspects that we need to start looking at are the high turnover of remand detainees that we have. We have, in some centers, for example, within the first 3 months, we have an 80% turnover of remand detainees, and we need to look at the reason for that and whether there's some other intervention that needs to be done, obviously then in collaboration with SAS and other role players. We have also within the electronic monitoring looked at work together within a task team established between all of the different SAFSA departments, or the relevant ones in this case, together also with the head of the Magistrates Commission, Josh Bacordi, who's been taking part, so that we can come up with a protocol where all these departments can work together in a way that makes electronic monitoring or alternative sentencing more effective. We can't, we don't see it as something that we necessarily need to do on our own. Certainly, the more we work together within the cluster, the more effective we will be. But I think we've seen those rocks come in remand detention dramatically. Next year, we'll have a better idea of whether it's a sustainable thing.
And that's why you see our view is that we should rest, because you seem to be left on your own without the societal assistance. That's why I was putting the question whether it would not help that we maybe just have an idea, bring all your people from the cluster, we bring people from society and say this is the societal matter. What is this that we all can do together and allocate responsibilities to others?
Thank you, Chair. I will try not to repeat what Mr. Rotman has said. I think, firstly, Chair, we need to agree, as the Honourable Mr. Ellen has indicated, that we are on the same side and we need to see how we deal with this on our plate. Chair, I want just briefly to refer to the multi-pronged strategy that the Department is currently applying. And the eight-pronged strategy, the multi-pronged strategy, is basically dealing with remand detainees, sentence offenders, capital works, and then into the integration of offenders into society. Chair, one can confidently say that the strategy and the interaction with the cluster is working, although there's still room for improvement. Chair, in terms of 2004, as the slide on the population indicated, we were of a total number of offenders of around 187,000. And currently we are on 157,000, meaning that we are roughly about 30,000 less than 10 years ago. Chair, in terms of awaiting trial detainees, I just want to add that we have the bail protocol that is assisting, because 2000, we had 63,000 awaiting trial detainees. We are currently having 41,000. So clearly they are down over a number of years, Jay. But Jay, in terms of the offenders who are and the inmates who are behind bars, I just want to pause a little bit to the remand detainees. We have on any given day about 15 to 18% of those 41,000 who have bail, who cannot afford the bail. So, meaning that between 5 and 6,000, if they are in the financial position, they can pay their bail and they can be released, meaning that the 41,000 can even come down to 35,000. Here we know of knowing people in the country that are in a position to pay bail of R1 million, but we have people behind bars who cannot afford R500. And because they don't have that 500, they remain behind bars. So in terms of the sentence population, we have on any given day 3,000 offenders with fines. And the
fines ranging also from a few hundred to a couple of thousand. We can also not afford to pay those fines. And again, Chair, adding to those, we have about 10,000 who are serving sentences in less than 24 months, meaning that they are sentenced to short-term sentences, and obviously one is of the view that again here, they don't have the financial means, so those 3,000 will remain inside our facilities up until we can convert their sentence or place them out on parole or convert it to community corrections. I can also confidently say that the multi-pronged strategy is managed on a bi-monthly basis on national level and on a monthly basis on regional level. What we call the National Overcrowding Task Team, where regions need to report on people who are behind bars. If a person cannot be placed out, they must provide the reasons. But again, if they have a warrant of detention, we cannot ignore that, meaning that we need to make sure that the person serves at least the minimum term prescribed by the Act before we can place them on parole. Chair, the matter that is also need to be mentioned is the matter of the criminalization. Chair, I think we cannot ignore that challenge that we have. In basic terms, here, currently, if you have a cell for 50 offenders, you need to add that 30%, meaning that where you have facilities for 30, you now incarcerate almost 6 in the same cell. And furthermore, Jay, the fact that we are overpopulated, the policy that we do have and which was also legislated by this committee in the past to separate offenders, the more numbers, the bigger challenge that you have to separate them. So, Jay, we cannot move away from that. Therefore, it was also included in the presentation that we play open cuts with the committee, where we identify challenges that we have, Chair. We share that with the committee. And Chair, let me also just refer to the committee that was established by the Chief Justice, that they call the National Efficiency Enhancement Committee, that is set by the Chief Justice, and Correctional Services part of that forum. In by the name of the National Commissioner or either the CDC demand or myself that represent the Department of the HA. Chair on provincial level, it's been chaired by the respective judge presidents, and again the HA is working committees, and this is now almost in action for 18 months, and Chair, one feel comfortable that the committee chaired by the Chief Justice, there are results. He wants to see results, and all departments are represented at that forum. So it's a relatively a new forum, but it gives all departments the platform. You know, public works are there, education is there, social development is there, SAS are there, NPA is there, justice is there, meaning that we are all under the same roof, and what we are sharing with the committee, we're also sharing with them, and from that meeting, we also established in the department a task team dealing with non-custodial sentences. This task team already visited several justice entities, and we also received the support from Judge Lukhodi, where this team already briefed some magistrates to convey to them what is in place, what alternatives are there to move away from the old thinking that if you have transgressed the laws of the country, you automatically go to a correctional center. So, Jay, this is a brief summary of what is happening, but we hear what you are saying about the proposal, Chair, and we will welcome any proposals that can assist to reduce the number of people behind bars, because we know the most affected are the poorest of the poor. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Smallberg, I think I'll be speaking on behalf of this committee that indeed you are playing open puzzles. And that's why we have come to the conclusion that we need to work with you and assist you, because you don't play hide and seek with us, you don't play tricks. We appreciate that. But you know, from what you are saying, it's quite clear that money plays a role as to who must be in the correctional center and who must be out. And as you correctly say, we are dealing with the majority of the people who are the poorest of the poor. So poverty contributes to the challenges that we have in the process. I'm just there wondering whether we should be out of order to refer back to what the minister said when he spoke about public, because the state has lots of land, farms, apartments and this thing. Now that if we come up with a structured private company, we can manage to get some people out of those centers to go and do work and be productive and even generate income for yourself. So those are the things that I think we should look at moving forward. But again, you can't do those things alone because we need cooperation with other departments. Honorable Majake Smith and Swart with the last. Those will be your concluding remarks.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to make a follow-up on the response that we're getting on the money to this, because your response is not how it should have been. We have less and less numbers, but it's not really mentioned as to how many, when you say you shouldn't worry. There's lesser numbers, because there's last report we received for that, we have about 45,000 remand detainees, and we regarded that as a problem, and we started looking at what to do with that population. And then for now, if the answer is that we shouldn't worry, and we have less, that does therefore mean that it's lesser than 45,000, and it says that we have less also comparatively speaking in terms of international standards, South Africa has got the right type of population. What is internationally acknowledged in relation to what we had at the moment, so that information can actually be provided so that we are quite fully informed of the situation, because the response almost is saying, don't worry anymore about human genius, it's something that is got under control. We need to be convinced that we do really have it under control. I'm quite fascinated by this National Efficiency Committee, and would like to actually have more information on it. And when it comes to the legislacy, I think the challenge that we've got is the vacancy rate, and I don't know whether this information is actually provided at that level agency. Because the one thing that is important is to be sure that our approach is holistic, and whatever forum we sit in should be a forum that gives answers to the problem, because continuously we have these areas that are problematic, but we have so many forums that are dealing with this. This is what we are actually doing, something that actually managed to elicit good results for us. If not, maybe we need to review our own. Thank you.
I don't hold this
brief
for this is working, but I am still there to bring that we should be worried. The numbers are decreasing, which means a change is happening, but there may be a decision waiting along.
Thank you, Chair. No, it's very not well reflected what you said, but I think what might help is if we find this issue with a graph that comes from around 2007 so that we can see it's consistent. I'm not at all trying to say we shouldn't worry. We should always be concerned, I think, about having people in our system that haven't had anything proved against them, so like they're innocent until proven guilty, and certainly we'd like to drop that number even more. So it is something that we feel concerned about, but in terms of our current number, we're at about 40,000 at the moment. But as I've said, you know, that number fluctuates so much between months. A December month tends to have a whole lot more than you'd have in July because of the closing down of courts and actions by SAT. So the 40,000, I'm always reluctant to quote a figure for a month because it's much better to see it over the course of the year. So what I would suggest is that I provide a graph to the committee that shows the consistent drop. In terms of international figures, the international standard that we're kind of aiming towards is 25% remand detainees versus total population, but the global average at the moment is 32%, and we are standing at 26%. So we're very close to what internationally is aimed for, the 25%, and we're far below the global average of 32%. That's obviously not, we're never ideal until we've looked at all of the issues of white people are still within our centres. The National Efficiency Enhancement Committee is something that is chaired by the Chief Justice, and I think as the CDC has indicated, basically looks comprehensively at the entire criminal justice system to try and sort out what are the issues. So from issues of remand detainees to appearances in court to the functioning of magistrates, the functioning of judges, the functioning of legal aid practitioners, public works is something that is being discussed at these forums as well. So it is really a sort of first-time engagement of really everybody that needs to be there, because when we talk about the clusters, we talk only about departments. The judiciary and the magistrates are hardly involved. So that is certainly something that the NEC has done to ensure that we have a much better impact. And obviously the NEC meets twice a year, but then you have the Provincial Efficiency Enhancement Committee, which are chaired by the judges president. And there we feel we can contribute significantly, because we have very accurate figures within our remand detention population. How long have they been there? How many are there? In which courts are people sitting that take much longer than other courts? So these are all numbers that we that are discussed within these forums to enable us to achieve a better functioning system.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. If I understood Mr. Smallberg correctly earlier on, and maybe when Mrs. Jolikana, they sort of intimated that because our inmate population is sometimes difficult to do separation at source type of thing, at source and addition. You know, I'm fascinated, Chair, and forgive me if I'm out of order. The department does itself a disservice, I think I must say it. I'll tell you why I say the department does itself a disservice. They come here, they say to us, overcrowding makes it difficult. But we get a high profile somebody that from inception gets sent to some other facility because we worry that, no, this person is going to be damaged if it goes into a whatever cell. I want the department to explain to us. I must put this on the table. They must explain to us. Because it's in the media, and I'm a member of parliament, I need answers. What? First of all, what's the difference? Let me give you a classic example. Somebody is accused of killing themselves. He goes to a communal cell. He happens to be black. Somebody else is guilty of killing somebody, goes to a hospital section because he's white. Last term, Chair, two men are guilty of throwing somebody into a lion's den. The white one gets out after parole. The black one stays in. I think we must address these things. I really think we must address these things. I'm asking the question to the department. When they come and say to us it's difficult to separate the source, that they must do that indiscriminately. It can't be like you think, Chair. It can't be money that makes life easy for one person who is in prison, but difficult for the next person who is in prison. That's why I think sometimes the department does this to themselves. And I know it might not be them for parole, but that colloquium that you're talking about must deal with these type of things. I just want to get a sense, what is the situation of the Oslo Pretoria story? Is it getting preferential treatment? Because I need to know as a member of parliament, quite frankly. And if you're taking, why is he getting preferential treatment? The second point, is this a comment to the department going back to FS control? You know, I would, and probably not possible in South Africa today, but I think we must move quickly to a situation where the manual control measures, as indicated in their slides, are minimized. They talk there that manually we search people. We know that there's collusion and corruption. So it doesn't matter how many manual warders or officials you have there. If there's no consequences for them colluding actively with bringing in contraband, then it's an exercise in futility. So my proposal would be, because it happens in estates and so on, you can't go to an estate in Johannesburg. And they don't do it manually. It's either biometrics or whatever. I think technology must be used for us to, as far as possible, eliminate manual and move towards automated because of the human factor and possible collusion. Thanks, Chair.
Just for the record,
remember that there's some official who went to the Oscar Pistorius strike and made some recommendations which suggested that he was representing the explanation the commissioner had to go to court and correct. So I think that the politicians must take responsibility, because we have to follow the principle of equality. Now, oversight also means that if we see some of those threats happening, we can't really blame for the officials. We must intervene ourselves as politicians or get the ministers responsible to say, why do you allow this to happen? And I think the Oscar Pistorius matter had also become politicized. There were many forces at work and so on. I don't believe to what extent it actually the expected the departments to do something more than what international politics is. But I just want to make it remark that those who honorable Sark and honorable Sark may be able to comment on the same matter. Otherwise, we'll close it and the same edition as well as
to give some comments that have been expressed already on that particular issue. We await the departmental response. We obviously are also aware that it is still pending in that matter as well. I just want to raise the issue relating to the remand trainees and those that I think Mr. Smallberger referred to, the number of remand detainees that are not able to pay bail. And I think that we need to again ask the department whether we've also been told that it is overcrowding and we passed legislation to deal with that. Section 63 capital A of the Criminal Procedure Act allows the department to go back ahead of a prison, to go back to magistrate and apply to change the conditions of bail if there is overcrowding in their prison. And when I was previously on the Correctional Service Portfolio Committee, it used to be used, and I would ask the department to comment whether that section is being used at all to go and change the conditions, because we've now been told that there is overcrowding and we allow for that. So there is a provision that assists the department. It doesn't make sense to me if there's bail of R1,000 and it's costing over R300 a day to keep that person in a mind detention. There is that provision to go back to the magistrate to apply to change those conditions of bail when the conditions in the prison are such a nature that it impacts upon the inmate. So, Chair, we need to look at that. And there's another section, I just can't remember what it is, but I know Section 63, Capital A is a section that can be used, and I would urge the department to make use of that to reduce the remand detainees where there is bail set and the members can't, the inmate cannot pay the bail. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just to record that the previous question that I asked about SEPA consulting and the quality of the technology has not yet been answered. But I also want to make another contribution to the problem of overcrowding. And that relates to the whole question of the transfer of offenders to serve out their sentences in their countries of citizenship. And we have made some progress in this regard, particularly within the SADC region, whereby a sentenced inmate would then be transferred back to his or her country of citizenship to serve out the sentence. And I'd like to know what progress is being made there, whether it's just stalled, because last time we did a calculation that 10,000 SADC citizens serving sentences of imprisonment in our prisons. And obviously if one could get all those people out of the system, or at least a substantial number of them, that would have major impact on prison overcrowding.
Well, it exists that there be few on the other side of the fence.
Relatively few.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay, I was saying mine is a comment because my colleagues have covered me in respect of CCTV and vetting of officials. I would like to comment on the issue raised by Acting Commissioner Mujisi on right of prisoners. As much as we are living in a constitutional state, the right to privacy of prisoners is stipulated in, however, each and every right has got a corresponding responsibility. And again, we have a limitation clause in terms of Section 36, and I would like to applaud our researchers for clearly enumerating under what circumstances can those are right be curtailed. Therefore, it is not conclusive to rely on this right to privacy alone. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Dr. Mitchell, can you respond? We have only 5 minutes.
Gentlemen, thank you very much, and Member of Parliament, for giving me the opportunity again to address you on the issues that you raised. I think when you the paper consultant and the quality of equipment, Chairperson, we request the committee to give us some time to get that information, who are the directors and who owns CEPAM, and provide a comprehensive report on the assessment of the equipment that the department has taken over for the Sondola and Kisulu contracts. And I think, secondly, with regard to the rights of prisoners, Chairperson, we are fully in agreement with the Member of Parliament that the rights also have limitations. And we're just trying to ensure that it is a common understanding amongst ourselves first, but also with the Members of Parliament and stakeholders, that where the right of the victim has been infringed, the right of the perpetrator should also be taken into consideration. We agree fully with the Member of Parliament. Chairperson, with regard to overcrowding session of remandees, yes, there are sections in the Criminal Procedure Act that dictate how we should then approach that situation, one of that being Section 63, Capital A. We have submitted a number of applications to our courts of law, and Chairperson, in other areas we have been very successful and others not so successful because of the mere fact that the remandee might be posing some security challenges and also fearing that they might be attacked by members of the public. Chairperson, the overcrowding that I want to talk about is with regard to all offenders, all categories. The department has accommodation of 120,000, approximately, to accommodate. And once we fill at 120,000, we won't have any overcrowding. And as we speak, we are just over 147,000, meaning we have 47,000 more people that we can accommodate in our facilities. And that is our concern. Any person more than what they're supposed to have, it's a serious concern because the human rights of that particular person will not be ensured as we are supposed to in terms of the constitution of this country. And it is our sincere commitment that if possible to reduce all overcrowding in the correctional services in South Africa to zero. And I think we'll be a much more efficient department and we'll be doing our job with the necessary zeal that we are supposed to have.
But we're working on that, reducing, and sometimes it goes up. One region, it goes up, it goes down, and so it goes. But on a daily basis, we have teams of our people that are working fervently with other role players to ensure that cases go faster to court, people are sentenced, and those that can go faster to court then are attended to properly. Chairperson, I don't know whether it would be proper for me to talk about the Oscar Pistorius matter. And why I'm saying that is because this matter is being considered for appeal. But safe to say that Oscar Pistorius is a person that has disabilities. And in this department, we have taken a decision through our own white paper that we shall be able to deal with people with disabilities different from other people. Now, whether he has money or doesn't have money, it's not of concern to us. What is important is to ensure that that person is able to serve his or her time in an environment that is conducive to his state. And that is what we're trying to do. There is no preferential treatment in our facilities. There is no preferential treatment for parole. It does happen from time to time, Mr. President, because we have a parole system that needs to be overhauled. That chairpersons of parole boards might take decisions that may be contrary to what is contained in the policies of the department. And here one specifically mentions the Water Proof 4, where the chairperson and his vice decided to take the matter back to the court of appeal for conversion. And due cases have been checked, and that is why as a department we need to put checks and balances ourselves to ensure that we do not have that. And that is why we are committed to having a real look again at the parole system as is contained in the legislation. What is it that we can build in to ensure that it does not cause this much controversy that it is causing? Same applies to medical parole chairperson. We want to look at that to ensure that people that are not able to look after themselves properly, and where there are no systems, we together with non-governmental organizations find systems where these people can be kept so that nobody died in prison. Chairperson, I think we are pleased with that as a department and as a collective. We can assure you that all of the above that I mentioned are areas of concern to us that we think if we can scrutinize our act properly, we shall be in a position to ensure that this act has itself also in line with what our communities want. So as the chairperson mentioned, the issue of plowing back into the community. And I think for us that is a very serious and important aspect of our work, because in fighting crime, chairperson, we can't just be sitting in close environment and not do something to say crime does not pay. But importantly is to utilize offenders, to build schools, chairperson, to build clinics, to clean whatever we are supposed to do as they are paid back to the community. And this is a commitment that we want to ensure that it is also legislated. It's not something that happens by the way. It's legislated in our act and in our performance plan for the department, so that we can account openly to yourself and this portfolio committee and any member of the South African population that we are able to present. Lastly, chairperson, the issue that Mr. Honorable Shalom raised, there is significant work that has been done with regards to the transfer of census offenders to and from South Africa to other countries. There is one sticky point that still has to be resolved, chairperson. In other countries in the southern region, there are those countries that still are having the capital punishment. Now, this government, and as it has been arrived at, it is of the opinion that we need to put some sureties in place, that we give you the person, surely you need to make sure that the capital punishment is not going to take place. And I am just an official public servant. I don't want to get involved in that kind of a debate. Mine is to execute policies of this government. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think you have adequately addressed all the questions raised. And I want to agree with you that you shouldn't descend into political issues. You are an official. But we welcome
a commitment that there is and will not be any preferential treatment in the institutions, because that would be contrary to the Constitution. But of course, as the leadership, you cannot control wrong discretions and transformed, and we are not at the same level, all of us. There will be things who can quite hurt somebody. So we shouldn't take that as a trained mesh. Let's continue. But I can say in conclusion, honorable members, that I think that we have established a basis for constructive engagement with this department, and I think together with them we can do more and make the necessary changes. And we want to thank you very much for the time that you have given to us, and have a nice day. Unfortunately, I don't have the power to give you the freedom of Cape Town so that you can have a long weekend. But enjoy yourself. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.